כבוד רבנים, כבוד חברים, כבוד תלמידים יקרים, כבוד המשפחה. We have all heard of the concept of a gadol. A number of years ago, a book came out, The Making of a Gadol, that caused a lot of controversy. But the concept of gadol is not only Gadi Yashar. The concept of a gadol is not only in the world of Torah. It's almost in every realm. We have Medrash who speaks about Ein gadol b'nevi'im yoter mi-Moshe, Ein gadol b'shvatim yoter mi-Yehuda, and so also in the world of Ba'alei Tshuva. There's a Gemara in the source number one, Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, Daftan Vavim Adbeis. Amar Rav, Ein lecha gadol b'ba'alei teshuva yoter mi-Yoshiyahu b'doro ve'echad b'dorenu. The Gemara goes on to speak about who that anonymous echad b'dorenu that Rav was referring to was. But Yoshiyahu is a figure that we have in Tanakh, in Sefer Malachim, again in Divrei Hayamim. And he is considered to be, by Rav, the gadol shebabalei tshuva. It's well known in this Gemara that there is a disagreement over this between Rav and Shmuel, but we usually have a rule that except in the world of Mamonot, we go according to Rav, and being a baal tshuva doesn't have relevance to the world of Mamonot. But also it's pshuto shel mikra. If you look in source number two, the pasuk says, v'kamohu lo haya lefanav melech asher shav el Hashem b'chol levavo, ובכל נפשו, ובכל מאודו, ככל תורת משה, ואחריו לא קם כמוהו. That's a pretty very strong endorsement of the uniqueness of Yoshiyahu. Who was Yoshiyahu? He was the son of a king named Amon, and a grandson of a more well-known king named Menasheh. And in Sefer Malachim, Amon's legacy is summarized in three psukim. Vayas hara be'inei Hashem ka'asher asa Menashe aviv. He was evil. Vayelech b'chol haderach asher holach aviv vayavod et hagilulim asher avad aviv vayishtachu lahem. He was a classic oved avodah zarah to the nth degree. Vayazov et Hashem elokei avotah v'loholach b'derach Hashem. This was the environment in which Yoshiyahu grew up, in the house of Amon, the grandson of Menasheh. Amon was assassinated, and Yoshiyahu was coronated as a child king at the age of 8. When he was 18 years old, this is after being king for 10 years, he decided to give a facelift to the Beit HaMikdash. Now, again, from the background he was coming from, the Beit HaMikdash was not necessarily a place of Avodas Hashem. This was not religiously motivated by Yoshiyahu. It was a national shrine. And as we'll see later, it contained the Mizbechot of his grandfather Menasheh in the courtyards. It had a Mizbeach of his great-great-grandfather Achaz on the roof. There was an area in the Beit HaMikdash for the worship of the Asherah. And there were batei kedeshim, there were houses of ill repute that were connected to the avodah, to the service, priestesses, cult priestesses that served as a source of zima, of lasciviousness. Within the Beit HaMikdash, there was another area for the Baal, but it was a national shrine. It was something that Yehuda and the king of Yehuda, Yoshiyahu, had to be proud of in terms of its variety. And so Yoshiyahu decided to spruce it up, to fix up the Beit HaMikdash. And in the course of the renovations, an ancient Sefer Torah was found. Some say it was a Sefer Torah, the original Sefer Torah that had been written by Moshe Rabbeinu. And this Sefer Torah was read in front of Yoshiyahu. And that act of listening to the Sefer Torah was a cataclysmic act in the life of Yoshiyahu. He became a Baal Tshuva, not just a Baal Tshuva, but Gadol Shebebaalei Tshuva, according to Rav. He began to seek the advice of his contemporary Nevi'im, of Yirmiyahu, of Chuldah, and he decided to change the entire culture of the Jewish nation. He decided to turn the Jewish nation upside down from a nation of Ovdei Avodah Zarah to a nation of Baalei Tshuva, like himself, and of Ovdei Hashem. B'chol levavam u'v'chol nafsham, and he would add in b'chol ma'odam. With his money, as the king, with his status, he tried his hardest to turn Klal Yisrael upside down. And we have an entire perek in Sefer Melachim about how he gathered the people, the leaders, and the amcha, kol ha'am, mikatan v'ad gadol in Yerushalayim, and he read to them the part of the Torah that had been read to him, that had caused such a transformation in his life. He renewed the Brit between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he went on a campaign to eradicate any vestige of Avodah Zarah from the entire area of Eretz Yisrael. Not just the Beit HaMikdash, all the things that I mentioned previously that were in the Beit HaMikdash, I know that because this is what in Sefer Melachim it says, he removed. He took out the Asherah, he took out the Baal, he destroyed the Mizbechot, he destroyed the Batei Kedeshim, etc. Then he moved to Yerushalayim, destroyed all Avodah Zarah in Yerushalayim, Gei Ben Hinnom, etc., moved to all of the area of Yehuda, and even the area that had been occupied by the Aseret HaShvatim before they went into exile, and he destroyed everything, even the Mizbeach that existed for generations, from the time of Yeravam Ben Nevat in Beit El, even that he destroyed. And he burnt the bones of all of the Kohanei HaBa'al. And then, after he destroyed everything, and this is all in that year, when he was 18 years old, like many of you are 18 years old, age of a Torah Traga student. So then he created a project, very similar, maybe this was the core of the idea of Rabbi Warren Goldstein in South Africa. Rabbi Goldstein had a Shabbos project, Yoshiyahu had a Pesach project. He decided to make a Pesach that every Jew would participate in. He sent Yirmiyahu to the Aseret HaShvatim. Maybe there are those in exile in the Aseret HaShvatim who want to come back and participate in this Pesach project. And it was a wow moment. It was, in other words, it's very rare that in Sefer Melachim you get a sense of awesomeness. But over here, lo na'asa ka Pesach hazeh miyemei ha-shoftim asher shavtu et Yisrael, v'kol yemei malchei Yisrael u'malchei Yehuda. But none of it worked. He wasn't able to extend his enthusiasm, his religious fervor, his spirituality to the people. If we look over in source number 3, this is Nevuah of Yirmiyahu, which is introduced by Vayomer Hashem Elai b'yemei Yoshiyahu HaMelech. Namely, while all of this is going on, while he's destroying the Avodah Zarah, while he's having his Pesach project, and it appears that Klal Yisrael are participating. He didn't walk around on his own. He had the Jews in every area destroy all the public idols. He had the Jews in every area come to Yerushalayim. So Yirmiyahu tells Klal Yisrael, name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'gam b'chol zot lo shava elai b'goda achota Yehuda b'chol liba, that the tshuva which appeared on the surface in Yehuda was really just that, just on the surface. It was not b'chol liba. In their lave, there was treachery against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ki im b'sheker nu'um Hashem. I know that it's all a lie. I know that there is nothing here which is sincere. And Rashi quotes the Medrash that many of us are aware of from reading Sefer Echa, and the Perek on Yoshiyahu, ki im b'sheker, doro shel Yoshiyahu, the generation of Yoshiyahu, mar'in atzmam shehim tzadikim. They, on the surface, participated in the projects, in the campaigns of Yoshiyahu, v'heim rishayim, hayutzarim tzurot shel akum al daltoteihem mibifnim, chetzia al zeh v'chetzia al zeh. They would have their avodah zarah that would be hidden behind the door. Kishayu ma'averei akum bodkim hayadelet patuach lo hayu makirim ba. That whatever they did outside, it appeared that they were frum, but inside they remained ovdei avodah zarah. And so, with all that Yoshiyahu tried to prevent the Chorban, tried to prevent the Galut, with all of his charisma, with all of his positive energy, all of his campaigns and all of his projects, the Churban just kept creeping and just around the corner. And right after Yoshiyahu was niftar, was murdered, was killed, then the Churban basically began. And this is basically our issue. This is really our challenge in our generation, certainly, maybe in previous generations as well, as how do we as individuals and how do we as a nation, how can we internalize that which we know to be true? And why does it happen that so many times the message just fails to penetrate our heart? And we behave temporarily, okay, until a bit after Yom Kippur, and then it just evaporates. Why was Yoshiyahu, what was unique about him, that he was the Baal Tshuva, and he just wasn't able to communicate that to his generation? So I'd like to contrast two of the messengers of the message, two of the senses that we have, two of the mediums that we have towards the outside world, our sense of vision, our sense of hearing, shmiya v'ri'ya, and to see whether perhaps an understanding of these two senses would help us realize where we should be putting our efforts. In the physical world, if we want to compare these two senses, the sense of seeing and the sense of hearing, in the physical world, if we want to make a reality check, if we want to ascertain what occurred, so clearly seeing trumps hearing. Seeing is believing. Hearing is hearsay. It's a secondary, it's a tertiary source. If you look in source number 4, which is the Hebrew title of the Shiur, there's a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah which deals with Kiddush HaChodesh. Classically, Kiddush HaChodesh was accomplished by Beis Din when two Eidim, two witnesses, would come and after having been cross-examined, would stand in front of them, would testify that they saw the new moon, and the Beit Din would proclaim Mekudash, Mekudash. The Mishnah says that in a situation of Ra'uhu Beit Din Bilvad, the Dayanim themselves went outside and they saw the new moon, and they were the only witnesses. The Mishnah continues, Ya'amdu Shnayim V'ya'idu B'shnehem. The Beis Din splits up. Two of them stand in front, serve as witnesses. The others stand or sit in front of them. And we have the process undergone by the Beis Din, that we divide the Beis Din into witnesses and a Beis Din. And the Gemara asks, Va'amai, why in the world go through this process? Lo tehe shmiya gedola miri'iya. Self call self, these Dayanim saw with their own two eyes the new moon. Why bring it into a world of shmiya that they have to hear this from another source? The working assumption is that seeing something is much more valid than hearing about it. The Gemara gives it an answer we won't get involved in, but simply that this is the reality, that when we're dealing in the physical world and we want to know if something happens, then if we see it, that's our best line of evidence. We have over here in source number 5 a whole list in the Gemara that had to be seen to believed. Even if we have all sorts of works that we can read from Josephus, etc., mi shelo ra'a simchat beit ha-shoeva, lo ra'a simcha miyamav. Mi shelo ra'a Yerushalayim betifarta, lo ra'a krach nechmad me'olam. Mi shelo ra'a beit ha-mikdash b'binyano, lo ra'a binyan mefu'ar me'olam. There's no way that seeing could ever be duplicated in any other means by hearing, by reading, etc. It had to be seen. This is all in terms of the physical world. However, when it comes to the spiritual world, if we want to make a validity check in the spiritual world, here we have the opposite phenomena. Here seeing is very, very deceptive. If I can bring you back to my past in the early 60s, that's 1960s, in the early 60s when I was in high school, so at that time the Russians sent a cosmonaut up into space in a craft called a Sputnik. And Yuri Gagarin was the first human being to exit the atmosphere and to enter into space. And when he returned, he called a press conference. And after praising the Russian scientific and military communities, establishment, Then Gagarin proclaimed to the world that there is no God, because he had a window in his Sputnik, in his spacecraft, and he looked high and low. He did not see a throne. He did not see angels. There is no God. The flight of this Sputnik initiated a race into space. And America was very frightened that the Russians would precede them. And so they put all of their energy into putting a man on the moon. Those physicists who had served as taxi drivers because they weren't able to make a living all of a sudden became in high demand. And after a few years, there were three astronauts on their way in an Apollo spaceship towards the moon. And as Americans do things, with a color TV camera. And when they got halfway to the moon, they announced that they were going to show the world what the moon looks like from that vantage point. We had never seen the moon from that vantage point. And so hundreds of millions of people, most people didn't have color TV, but whatever they had, went to watch on TV to see the moon from that vantage point. And it was interesting. And then what was fascinating was they turned the spacecraft around so that the window and the color TV camera faced the Earth. And they said, we want you to see what the Earth looks like from this vantage point. Now, that's the first time in human history that we had ever seen the Earth from space. And it was really, really beautiful. And while everyone is standing there with their jaws open watching the Earth, the three astronauts in unison begin to recite from the Book of Psalms, from Sefer Tehillim, the heavens proclaim the glory of God. Hashamayim mesaprim kavod kel. Namely, you have two groups of human beings, Yuri Gagarin representing the Russians, and you have these three astronauts representing America, seeing the same scene, Be'erech, and describing its spiritual status in totally opposite manners. Each of them according to their preconceptions, according to their education, and according to their subjective perspective. This phenomena, fascinatingly, in terms of the exact case of looking at space from different perspectives, is already found in Tanakh. If you look in sources number 6 and 7, we have a pasuk in Yeshayahu where we are exhorted, Su'ush marom einechem, look into space. Ru'u mi bara eila, you're going to be overwhelmed by the spirituality that you're going to find. You're going to find God in space. Hamotzi b'mispar tzva'am l'kulam b'shem yikra me'rov onim v'am etz koach. You're going to be overwhelmed by what you're going to see. Just look. Marom einechem. While in Sefer Devarim, we have the opposite. Pen tisa einecha hashamayma, least you look upwards. Ra'isa shemesh v'yareach hakol chavim, kol tzva hashamayim v'nidachta. That you're going to be pushed off from worshiping HaKadosh Baruch Hu by looking at space. It's going to offer other alternatives of worship. We have over here, namely, that everything depends. If you're the type of a person who is v'nidachta, don't look up. If you're the type of a person who could look up and feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then look up. The Zohar, fascinatingly, points out that in number 6, in the Pasuk Yeshayahu, the Rashi Tevot of the first three words, Su'u Marom Einechem, is Shema. Namely, that if you're looking at things from the perspective of Shema, you're going to come up with one conclusion. From a different perspective, with a different conclusion. But this is really what we say every day in the third parsha of Shema. We have in source number 8, Lo sasuru acharei levavchem v'acharei einechem. The Malbim points out that most of the world views this pasuk as being backwards. That most of the world would say, ha'ayin ro'ah v'halev chomed. That I desire that which I see. Ein adam mitave ela mashe ra'u einav. So it should really say, lo sasuru acharei einechem v'acharei levavchem. But Chazal understood, no, the Torah understands human psychology. Ha'einayim, points out the Sifri, ha'einayim hochot acharei halev. That first the person has the perspective, first he decides, first he defines where he's coming from, And then that determines what he is going to see, how he is going to see it. The prime example of this deception of seeing in the spiritual world is, of course, the Meraglim, where you have 12 Meraglim going to see the exact same physical reality, and two of them see one spiritual reality, and 10 of them see a different spiritual reality. To Yoshua and Kalev Tova Haaretz Ma'od Ma'od, to the other Meraglim, Eretz Ochelet Yoshvehahi. And Chazal point out that what the Meraglim did was they switched the order of the alphabet. That in our alphabet we have an ayin that precedes the pei, and Vehem Hikdimu pei la'ayin. They took the pei, that which they say, that which they felt, that which was part of their perspective, and saw according to that which they felt. Lo sasu acharei levavachem va'acharei einechem. What was their perspective? That's a machlokes mefarshim. Was their perspective one of fear, and out of fear they saw what they saw? Was their perspective one of comfort, of being in a beis medrash in the midbar, where all their physical needs are being taken care of, and they can sit and learn, and they didn't want to be farmers, they didn't want to be soldiers? Was their perspective one of kavod? They were leaders, and their fear was that when they entered into Eretz Yisrael, there would be new elections. Maybe they would be deposed. Maybe they would lose their status. Whatever it was, they saw through their perspective. Ikdimu pe la'ayin. But as opposed to the world of seeing, which is so deceptive in the spiritual realm, the world of hearing, that plays the most meaningful medium that we have spiritually. To transmit something faithfully in depth is via hearing. Rabbi Dr. Lord Sacks, I have all of his titles. Rabbi Dr. Lord Sacks has a seminal article, which is really, really very special, called The Spirituality of Listening. And he points out that the verb shma, that verb that we have in the Hebrew language, cannot be translated. It's untranslatable into English, because there are simply too many meanings: to hear, to listen, to pay attention, to understand, to internalize, to respond, to obey. In the area of spirituality in which seeing is handicapped, here, hearing takes the front row. Shlomo Karbach once pointed out that the definition of a Jew is a shomea, a hearer. Shema Yisrael. If you want to know who a Jew is, to the degree that he hears, that's the degree to whom he is a Jew. Now, in Western society, which is built on science and which is built on observation of the physical universe, in which seeing is believing, we have a fascinating metaphor. If I understand something, I say, I see, I see. But in our world of spiritual reality, if I understand something, our metaphor is, I hear. Ta shma, shma mina, a shmaitata. Namely, I'm involved in listening. After the Shoah, it's well known that there were many Jewish children who were hidden away in monasteries and who were being raised, unfortunately, as Christians. And the authorities of those monasteries claimed that these Jewish children did not exist, that all the children in the monasteries were good Christian children. And it's well known that a rabbi, or a number of rabbis, the story is told about a number, either Chief Rabbi Herzog, or Rav Eliezer Silver, and or Rav Kahaneman, the Panovich Rav, they would request to go into a monastery and simply shout out two words, and then they would leave. The two words they would shout out were Shema Yisrael. And if there were Jewish children in that monastery who had not heard that phrase for years, and maybe they had only heard it in a lullaby when they were babies, that hearing of those words, Shema Yisrael, caused them to come forward tearfully and identify themselves as who they really were. This is the koach hashmi'a. And why is there such a difference between these two senses? Why is seeing so illusionary in the spiritual realm, and why is hearing so meaningful? So Rabbi Sacks takes the approach that the difference is in terms of how we approach these two senses. In order to see something properly, like a photographer, you have to detach yourself from the object that you are taking a picture of. There has to be a sense of your being able to see it in its entirety, without any subjectivity. Masha'enkein, in the world of hearing, in the world of listening, that allows for a relationship. It could be a relationship between the speaker and the listener, like Martin Buber's I thou, as opposed to an I it. Or I thought you could take it one step further, that if you have 10 people who are seeing something, then you have 10 individuals who see it. Each of them sees it through his own eyes. When you have 10 people who are hearing, like when you're davening in a minyan, and there's a shliach tzibur, and there are 10 people who are hearing, then their hearing unites them. That the Rambam calls tfilat hatzibur. Not tfilah bitzibur, but tfilat hatzibur. The shliach tzibur unites via his speaking and their hearing, they form one community. So the hearing brings together, as opposed to the seeing, that's detaching. So in science, detachment is very, very important. In spirituality, everything is in the world of connection. Rav Moshe Shapiro, he should have Refuah Shlema, Refuah Sanefesh, Refuah Saguf, he stressed a different distinction between seeing and hearing. He said that the power of vision is basically an illusion of completeness, that we see all the parts of the object simultaneously. Like we know that in a TV screen, there are hundreds of thousands of pixels, and we process them all simultaneously, and instead of seeing dots, we see what appears to us to be a complete picture. When we learn how to read, so there are different theories. Some of us learned how to read by seeing whole letters and then putting them together. Others of us learned how to read by seeing whole words. We were taught to see a word and then put things together, but we see whole. We see things in whole. When you see things as a whole, the completeness, that sort of puts a cap on our understanding. There's nowhere to go beyond a whole. There's nowhere to go beyond something which is complete. But hearing, by its nature, is an incremental process. Namely, that we hear sound units successively, one after the other. And then we combine them. We combine them into letters, into sounds, into words, into sentences, into paragraphs. And the sounds have to follow one after the other. If two sounds come simultaneously, trei koli lo mishtame, we can't hear it. So the moment that it's going incrementally, that lends to a depth, that lends to a continuity. There's always where to go. It's never going to end. It can always continue and continue and continue. And so it leads to a concept of understanding, of complexity. Again, the toshma, the shma mina, the shmaitata. There is a very unintelligible sefer to most people, including myself, that was written by the Nazir, by Rav David Cohen, the father of Rav Shar Yashuv Cohen, Zichrono Livracha, who passed away very recently. He wrote a sefer called Kol HaNevuah HaHigayon HaIvri HaShim'i, a philosophical treatise in which he wants to create a new philosophy of Jewish spirituality, all based on the centrality of hearing. Higayon ha'ivri ha-shim'i. So we have then this concept of spiritual hearing. And we have Rabbi Sachs's dilemma that we have so many English terms for the concept of hearing. So what I'd like to do is suggest that perhaps we can break everything down into three categories. And these three categories will help us place ourselves, define ourselves in terms of our level of hearing, at least on a spiritual plane. We have what we'll call, and I'll explain each of these on its own. We have an external hearing, we have a normative listening, and we have a transformative understanding. Okay, those are the paradigms of spiritual perception. Okay, so let me explain what I mean with the terminology. Let's return for a moment to Yoshiyahu and his generation. We pointed out that Yoshiyahu heard the Torah being read to him, and the people heard that same Torah being read to them. He was impacted. The people slid off of them. Let's look at the psukim where these two processes are described, Numbers 9 and 10. By Yoshiyahu, it says, Vayehi kishmoa hamelech et divrei et sefer haTorah, vayikra et begadav. Immediately when he heard, it brought about a sense of, I can't deal with this. I have to start all over. I'm in mourning for myself, for the last 18 years of my life, etc. However, in the next parak, when he goes ahead and reads it, Vayal hamelech beit Hashem, kol ish Yehuda, kol yoshvei Yerushalayim ito, kohanim neviim, kol ha'am lemikaton ve'ad gadol, vayikra ba'aznehem et kol divrei ha'sefer brit hanimtza beit Hashem. Yoshiyahu heard with the verb shama. The nation, heim he'ezinu, they heard as well, but they heard with their ears. Laha'azin is to hear with your ozen, with your ear. Even in English, the word hear is basically an H and then ear. Namely, that you have, you are using your external organs in order to be able to try and absorb something, but it's an external phenomena. The sound gets to your ear and it stays there. Now, when we're dealing with objects that hear, and we believe that objects hear, ha'azinu ha'shamayim va'adabera, o shim'u shamayim v'ha'azini aretz, what it says in Yeshayahu, is no problem if it goes to the external, because by an object, the external is the internal, and the internal is the external. So there's no problem for the shamayim to be ma'azin, or for the aretz to be ma'azin. However, by a human being, external is not internal. It means that there's no impact on the personality. Yoshiyahu listened, shama. The nation heard, he'ezinu. It was superficial. They may have obeyed, but there was no commitment. So publicly, they destroyed the idols. Publicly, they kept that first Pesach, but it was all external. Nothing went into them. The same diuk is made also in the Mechilta. In the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim, we have the Parsha of Eved Nirtza. You have a Jewish slave who was sold into slavery because he stole. And he worked for the 6 years to pay back that which he stole. And then he wants to remain with his Baal. He wants to remain in the house where he is a slave. He wants to remain with his master. So he has to undergo a ceremony of Ritziata Ozen. His ear is pierced. And the Mechilta asks, why the ear? Why is the ear to blame for this person's having stole, for this person having decided to remain a slave? And so Rashi quotes the language of the Mechilta in number 11. Amar Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, Ozen zot sheshamal har Sinai lo tignov velach veganav, teiratza. Im mocher atzmo, Ozen sheshamal har Sinai kili b'nei Yisrael avadim, halach v'kana adon latzmo, teiratza. The problem was over here that this Eved had heard with his ear, and it never went beyond his ear. It never went into him. He never internalized the message that he shouldn't steal. He never internalized the message that he shouldn't want to remain an Eved. We're avodim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not to human beings. And since it was the ozen sheshama, so we pierced the ear, that we want to try and teach this Eved that he has to open up his ozen. It's not my pshat, but it's said both by the Chiddushei Harim and Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. So we have it both by Chassidim and by Misnagdim. That we have this concept of a ha'azinu, of an external listening. That's A. However, moving over to the world of shmi'ah, to the world of active listening, still we have two more categories. Not only do we have an external hearing, stage one, we have a normative listening, and we have a transformative understanding. And this I will illustrate with a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Netziv. The Netziv looked at the psukim in Sefer Bereishis. Look together with me at sources number 12 and 13. Source number, in both of them, Sarah has a request of Avraham. In source number 12, Vatomer Sarai el Avraham, Hineina atzarani Hashem miledet, I cannot give birth. Bona el shivchasi, take my shivcha, take Hagar as a pilegesh. Ulai ibane mimena, maybe we will have a child in a surrogate manner from her. Vayishma Avram likol Sarai. And Avram listened. Moving farther in Sefer Breshit, after Yishmael is already born and he's part of the family, Vatomer la'Avram, in source number 13, Vatomer la'Avraham, Garesha ama hazot v'et bena, ki lo yirash ben ha'ama hazot im b'ni im Yitzchak. Vayomer ha'elokim el Avraham, al yirab be'enecha l'anar v'lamasecha, kol asher tomar elecha sara, shma bikola, ki b'Yitzchak yikarei lecha zara. That when Avraham listens to Sarai, in terms of Hagar, it says that Vayishma likol Sarai. When Avraham is told by Hashem to listen to Sarah in terms of sending off Yishmael, it's Shema Bikola. We have a Lamed and we have a Bet. Points out the Netziv, these are two worlds. These are two worlds. We have a world of Lishmoa Likol. That means to obey, to take someone's advice, to listen to, take a Pilegesh. That's normative thinking, to behave in a certain manner. Shma Bikola, that means to understand, to change your perspective on Yishmael, to internalize the message that we're dealing with the spiritual potential of Yitzchak, which is being threatened, and there are great ramifications to your decision, to your response. And so Avram was told, Shma Bikola, listen into her voice, what's behind what she's asking of you. That's already a transformative understanding. Lishmoa bikol, that's a midah. That's a darga that one can strive for. If we look in source number 14, Yitzchak is told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that why is he next in line? V'hirbesi et zaracha kechochvei ha'shamayim v'nasati lezaracha et kol ha'aretzot ha'el hisbarachu bezaracha kol goyei ha'aretz. Why? Ekev asher shama Avraham bikoli. Avraham was not just shomer mishmarti mitzvotai chukaitai v'toratai. It's not just that he kept my commandments, but shama bikoli. He understood what I want of him. He understood what's behind the commandments. He's internalizing the commandments. He's internalizing his connection with me. That's the uniqueness of Avraham. It transformed him. It transformed his progeny, and it created Klal Yisrael. The entire motif of Sefer Devarim is Shema. Rabbi Sachs claims there were 92 times the word Shema is found. I counted 70, but probably it's somewhere in between. But it's repeated over and over and over again. And as we get close to the end of Devarim, as we get close to the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's speech to Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu begins to speak about Lishmoa Bikol, Lishmoa Bikol, Lishmoa Bikol. If one looks at the two tochachot, we're all aware that there are two parashot in the Torah of tochacha, one in Torah Kohanim in Vayikra, and one in Mishneh Torah in Devarim. So classically, how do we divide these between these two? We say, oh, look at the diktuk. The diktuk is different. That in the tochacha in that we have in Devarim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking in second person. Lo in bechukotai telechu, my chukim, ma she'en kein in Sefer Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu in third person. Moshe Rabbeinu speaks about yitain Hashem et oivecha, etc. Or the second distinction which is made is that in bechukotai telechu, the entire tochacha of Vayikra is lashon rabim, ma she'en kein in Sefer Devarim, it's all lashon yachid. This is, here it speaks about im shamoa tishma'u, and here it speaks about im shamoa tishma. But there's a much deeper distinction. Look at sources number 15 and 16. 15 is a tochacha in Vayikra. Im lo tishma'u li, v'lo ta'asu et mitzvot elu. Im ad elu lo tishma'u li, lo tovu lishmoa li. We have the shmia of the normative hearing. If you don't obey me, Ma she'en kein in Devarim, v'haya im lo tishma bikol Hashem Elokecha, ki lo shamata bikol Hashem Elokecha, ki lo shamata bikol Hashem Elokecha. It's repeated only. You only have lamids in Devarim, I'm sorry, in Vayikra, and you only have beis in Devarim. Chazal tell us, the Zohar tells us, quoted by the Ramban, that these two tochachot relate to two different churbanot. The tochacha in Vayikra relates to the churban bayit Rishon. Tochacha in Devarim relates to churban bayit Sheni. We're dealing with two different worlds. Churban bayit Rishon, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayot, Shvichut Damim, Lo Shamatem Likoli. You didn't obey me. You didn't keep my commandments. Bayit Sheni, kept mitzvos. Bayit Sheni, learned Torah. Tkufa the Tanoim is Bayit Sheni. But Lo Shamatem Bikoli, Sinat Chinam, Bavur Hayab Yadam Limchot, Velo Michu, Lo Shamatem Bikoli. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has expectations. That's the tochacha of Lo Avadatem Et Hashem Elokecha B'Simcha U'Betuv Levav. That's the bikoli, to understand what underlies Torah and mitzvos. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want to create? What kind of tzelem elokim? What kind of human being? What kind of ben adam lachavero? What kind of ben adam lamakom? And so we have over here then three levels of shmiah. We have a level of shmiah which is purely external, to hear. We have a level of shmiah which is to obey, which is positive. And we have a level of shmiah which is going to bring us to where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to get us to, which is the transformative understanding. The shmiah of Avraham Avinu, the shmiah of Bikoli. Just returning for one moment to the distinction that we had between Ri'iyah and Shmiah in the spiritual realm, that Ri'iyah is deceptive, illusionary, Shmiah is real. We can understand why, I think, to the best of my knowledge, we do not have mitzvot of Ri'iyah. We have a mitzvah to be seen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Shalosh Regalim, Le'ra'ot. But we don't have a mitzvah to see, but we do have a mitzvah to hear, Rosh Hashanah. We have a mitzvah to hear, Lishmoa Kol Shofar. What would you think? Is the mitzvah to hear Kol Shofar Lishmoa Likol Shofar or Lishmoa Bikol Shofar? Our nusach is very neutral, Lishmoa Kol Shofar. However, in the Rishonim, we have an alternate nusach in number 17. The Rosh quotes, Haravia Hevi HaYerushalmi, Tokeya Shofar Tzarech Levarech, Asher Kedisham Esosavet Zivanu, Lishmoa Bikol Shofar. If you're going to have an introductory letter, it's going to be the bit. And as we're all aware, even the Rambam, who doesn't have a bet or a lamed, simply Lishmoa Kol Shofar, but in Hilchot Shuva, number 18, Af al pi shetkiat shofar Rosh Hashanah gzerat hakatuv, remez yeshbo, uru yeshene mishenatchem, nir damim hikitsu akitsu, etc. I'm sure that at some point, in some drasha on Rosh Hashanah, if not at least once, more than once, you've heard this Rambam. Because what the Rambam is saying is, certainly, Lishmoa Shofar is a normative mitzvah. You have to obey it. That's Hilchot Shofar. But there's also, in Brisker terminology, there's also a Kiyum Shebalev. There's also that which was meant to be internalized, that which was meant to penetrate, a nonverbal message that was meant to connect you, that means so many things simultaneously. Malchios and Zichronos and Geula, all simultaneously within the Lishmoa Bikol. That's the uniqueness of the message of Shofar. So what we've seen up to this point is that to be spiritually sensitive, to internalize, to absorb, to make Avodas Hashem part of our personality, we have to work on sensitizing our hearing. We have to be able to work on sensitizing our hearing to listening, bein adam lachavero, to create empathy, to create validation, to create a connection, and bein adam lamakom, to understand what Hashem wants of us above and beyond his mitzvos, how Hashem wants us to connect to him. But does that mean that seeing should just be pushed aside in the spiritual realm, that we should leave seeing to the scientists who are going to observe physical phenomena? We should leave seeing to the courts who are going to use sight as the best form of evidence? Is our vision really so flawed that we can't really see properly? Only God sees properly. If you'll turn over the page and just skip to source number 21, That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Shmuel. Vayomer Hashem el Shmuel, Al tabet amarehu v'el gova kamato, ki ma'astihu, ki lo yireh ha'adam, ki ha'adam yireh la'inayim v'Hashem yireh la'levav. That when you're choosing a king, don't trust your eyes. Human beings have eyes. You can't trust eyes. I, says God, I see into the heart. Is that really true totally, that only God can see? That we can't see at all from a spiritual plane? Our vision is always being warped. Sof kol sof, source number 19. Don't we have a chiyuv of atem re'item? God tells us, you saw asher asiti b'mitzrayim, and therefore va'ata im shamoa tishmu b'koli, b'koli. Don't we have a re'iyah that can bring about a shmia? Or in source number 20, atohar esa ladat ki Hashem Elokim at Matan Torah, and that brought about a viyadat ayom vashevota elav avecha. Isn't there some form of seeing that a human being can see which is spiritually meaningful that we should try also to develop? And don't we have in the Zohar tochazi? Nachon, in the Bavli we have toshma, but in the Zohar we have tochazi, come and see. Isn't seeing illusionary? Isn't seeing deceptive? Why is the Zohar sending us to our eyes? So the answer is certainly. There is a very, very special type of sight. And that's what we have over here in Masechet Tamid. We are all aware of Pirkei Avos, Ezehu Chacham Halomed Mikol Adam. But there's a parallel statement in Masechet Tamid, Ezehu Chacham Haroeh Et HaNolad. That there is a re'iyah of the Nolad, of someone who could look at the present and see the future. And that is something which is awesome. I'll just give the example of Rabbi Akiva. In number 23, we have Rabbi Akiva and his friends who are coming to the Yerushalayim B'chor Bana. They reach Har HaBayit, Ra'u, they saw a Shu'al Yatzam Bit Kodesh Kodashim. The friends of Rabbi Akiva, Etchilu Livkot, Rabbi Akiva Mitzachek. They ask him why he's laughing. He asks them why they're crying. And he explains to them that there are two nevuot. There's one nevuah, which is in the present tense, that they are seeing in front of their eyes, of Tzion, Chsadeh Techaresh. But there's another nevuah, which is linked to that nevuah, which is 2,000 years in the future. Od Yeshvu Zekenim Uzekenot Berechovot Yerushalayim. Rabbi Akiva says, you look at the present and you see the present. I look at the present and I see b'yadua shenivuato shel Zecharia mitkayemet. I look at the present and I see the fulfillment of the future. I look at the present and I don't see a shu'al, I see gan ha'pa'amon. I see gan sakar. I see zekenim uzekenot yoshvim b'Yerushalayim. And that brings me to tzchok. Ezehu chacham haro'eh et hanolad. To be able to look at the goal, to look at the future, to look at the potential and to see it as though it is being actualized, as though it's mamish right in front of our eyes. This was Rabbi Akiva, to look at a rock being cut out by water and to see his future as a gadol be Israel. This is the seeing of Atem Re'item. A seeing to see Yitziat Mitzrayim, and that brings to Shema Bekoli, to hear a Matan Torah, and that brings to B'chol Levavchem U'v'chol Nafshechem, to be able to see the end product, to be able to see the goal. This was the Re'iyah of Moshe Rabbeinu. At the end of his life, we read in number 24, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu a gift. He gave him a tour of Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to see Eretz Yisrael. Vayal Moshe me'arvot Moav al har Nevo, vayarehu Hashem et kol ha'aretz, and the pasuk ends up ad hayom ha'acharon. And Rashi over there points out al tikri hayom ha'acharon, the last ocean, ela hayom ha'acharon. Moshe Rabbeinu had the vision of Ezehu Chacham haroeh et hanolad. He was able to see Eretz Yisrael ad tchiyat ha'metim. To be able to have that vision, that is a vision that Rabbi Akiva had, that Moshe Rabbeinu had. This l'chora is the tachazi of the Zohar. To be able to see the next level, one more down, to be able to see the beyond. And so what we should be doing, what we should be working on is sharpening these two midot, sharpening our spiritual shmi'ah, our shmi'ah bikol Hashem, and sharpening our spiritual ri'yah, the Ezehu Chacham Haro'eh et Hanolad. Each of these will be a means to do tshuva in terms of ourselves, in terms of transforming ourselves. Source number 26, V'shavta ad Hashem Elokecha, V'shamata bikolo. That part of tshuva is V'shamata bikolo. Say for Yechezkel, V'yir'eh V'yashav mikol psha'av. Tshuva comes from the proper ri'iyah, not the ri'iyah of the Meraglim, not the ri'iyah of a Yuri Gagarin, the ri'iyah of Su'u Einechem Ur'u, Mi Bara'ela, the ri'iyah of the Ezeu Chacham Haro'eh et Hanolad. I would just like to end off with a Hasidish story. The story goes as follows, very short story. Rav Buna Mipshischa once visited his Rebbe. His Rebbe was the Yehudi HaKadosh. And his Rebbe, the Yehudi, asked Rav Buna to give him a pasuk, any pasuk, open a chumash to any pasuk, and I'll give you pshat in the pasuk. So Rav Buna chose the last pasuk of Parshas Vayelech, what we read yesterday. That's the final source, number 28. Vayedaber Moshe bo'aznei kol kahal Yisrael, et divrei hashira hazot ad tumam. Literally, we read it, and Moshe Rabbeinu read in the ears of Klal Yisrael all the words of the song of Torah until it was completed. The Yehudi HaKadosh heard the pasuk, thought for a minute, and said, ad tumam. And Rav Bunam began to dance for joy. He had never heard such a beautiful Dvar Torah in his life. And sitting opposite him was Rav Chanoch Henoch of Alexander, who said, why in the world are you dancing? All he did was repeat the last two words of the pasuk. What was said over here? What happened? And Rav Bunam said, you're smart. You tell me. You tell me what the Yehudi meant. So Rav Chanoch Henoch looked at the pasuk and looked at the pasuk. And he said, oh, I think I understand. If the last two words of the pasuk, ad tumam, relate to the shira, that he read the shira until it was completed, it should have said ad tuma. The shira is a nekeva yachid. Shira, tuma, until it is completed. Ad tumam meant that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to Klal Yisrael to their ears, until the message went through their ears, transformed them, completed them, ad tumam, until they realized that the Torah is a shira, it's a song, and that we are the only choir that can sing this song, and we are the only symphony that can play its tune. This was a transformative hearing, ad tumam, to the depths of their being. Rav Bunam smiled. That's exactly what the Yehudi meant, and that's why I danced. Mi Yirtzeh Hashem, we should all have a Gemar Chasima Tovah.